Mama!
Love, that is, you interlocked too.
Now stretch them quite as
soccer and the
quiet, please. In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
I felt like a reptile. Like a reptile. I felt like a reptile.
Are we rolling?
Yes, we are rolling.
Already?
Yep.
Oh, even better. What episode are we on? 13?
13.
Lucky for some.
Yeah, lucky for some.
Nice. Okay, hello and welcome to Full Reptile Radio, episode 13. On a Wednesday, not on Friday the 13th. Even better.
Yeah.
How's things, man?
Yeah, good, mate. Yeah, had a good week. We're filming with Dan yesterday and just shooting some war rooms for the upcoming cards. There was a lot of exciting fight news recently as well. Yeah. So, just planning out the next few months in terms of war rooms and picks podcasts and whatnot. So, yeah, there'll be a lot coming your way in terms of content on the main Full Reptile channel.
Nice.
But, yeah.
So busy.
Yeah.
Busy breaking down fights.
Yeah, man. Yeah. But yeah, like I said, there's a lot of potential good fights coming up. Obviously, UFC 291 with the BMF, and that card is like stacked. And then the whole, this thing this week with Aljo and Sean as well.
Yeah, a bit of aggro, aren't they?
Yeah. So I think Aljo called Sean out to fight in July instead of August. And there's been a bit of a dispute between when and where they're going to fight and whatnot. So, yeah.
So nothing really. So when are they going to fight?
I think it's UFC 292, which I think is the August card.
Okay.
Yeah. So
not a big deal.
Yeah. But I think there's been a bit of a dispute with like Aljo and Dana in terms of, yeah, I don't know the exact details of it, but
Aljo seems a bit argy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Just if people are prepared to fight and there's already been promotion made around it, then just make it happen.
Yeah. And I just get a feeling in a minute from the UFC, everything just feels a bit unstable. Everything feels a little bit shaky. And I don't know if it's because, obviously, they've been in the game for such a long time that they've kind of controlled the narrative of whatever they've wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been easy to do that because everyone's been on board, under contract and all the rest of it. Whereas I think it's really difficult when you see certain people are treated a certain way, other people are treated a different way, and it's meant to be the same for everyone. So obviously, like when you've got the Conor effect on people, or, well, even John Jones, and like you've seen people fired from the organization for doing certain stuff, and then you see people like John Jones sort of skim across the way without even having to worry. And not just John, there's been plenty of people that have done shady shit that has been, like, it's been ignored. I mean, I can't necessarily name exactly all they are, all of them, because I would probably get done for slander. But I've heard from really, really reputable sources and experienced and seen certain things myself and behaviours that you're like, holy fucking shit, it doesn't feel like the cohesive thing that it's portrayed to be. Does that make sense?
Mm.
And I think, like, when you've got some champs that, or some people that can come in, call what shot they want, when they want it, where they want it, and it's all good. Then you've got other people that have put their life on the line and essentially just been completely company men or company women. And they've not got the same sort of pull, or they've not got the same sort of reaction from the management. And then Dana's excellent at being able to turn things around, and he's a bit like Teflon.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He's Teflon Dana. And obviously nothing really sticks. And even look at New Year, what happened with him. And he was like, okay, yeah, that's happened. But I tell you what, I'll choose my punishment. And you're like,
yeah, but the irony around the whole slap thing as well.
Yeah, mate, this is it. I don't know. I mean, he's been caught in so many lies and just sort of Teflon past it that it's almost, that's the character. Do you know what I mean? You can't necessarily ever believe anything. And unfortunately, because his MMA machine is currently the most powerful, it's the one that gets the most recognition and the most views. And obviously with people like the PFL coming along,
Yeah, I think the whole Ngannou situation shook it all up last week completely. As well. Like, by him announcing that and joining and kind of creating a stir amongst like the whole John Jones situation and,
yeah.
You know, it's kind of forced the UFC to make decisions that probably they didn't have planned, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's just a fly in the ointment, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like the whole thing of, oh, I think Ngannou's scared. You go, hold on. Like, scared of his job or just a, like, you can't call that man scared in any way, shape or form through what he's been in his life, like what he's been through. So to say he's scared, it just reeks of desperation a little bit. It's almost like a jilted partner that's a bit frustrated and doesn't really want to, they can't come to terms with it or talk about it just yet. And so when you look at it, it's, oh, he's scared. And then there was a time when Ngannou fought and he was like, if I'm John, I'm going down to 185. So you go, all right, but Ngannou's scared. And then Ngannou went out of his way to call out for the match. He was like, look, I'll fight John, which would have been incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously they couldn't get it done. So instead of going, yeah, we just couldn't get it done and being completely transparent, they then have to throw shit over someone else. And it's like, it's so frustrating because it's not like we can't see what's happening. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And when you've got someone like Ngannou that's gone, even if he's gone around every single organisation and gone, all right, I want this and I want to change it for the better to be this, that can be celebrated, really.
Yeah.
Like, you've even got, obviously Dana's got quite a few nut huggers that all sort of seem to, it's like legs of a spider that will give an angle from a different position, because I'll always listen to Dana just to hear what the current scuttlebutt is. But at the same time, some people can't stand him. Some people won't listen, but they might like someone like Henry Cejudo. So then they tune into what Henry's doing or saying. And obviously he is a company man and he's on the payroll. So when he starts to question things or like a different angle of the question, you think, fucking hell, man, why can't everyone just exist in the same sort of arena?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's all playground tactics. It's all playground
politics, yeah.
Bullying, hearsay, and I don't know.
I kind of like it because it has like spiced things up a bit just in terms, because I think for a while it was a bit stagnant in terms, but then this year, like with the return of John,
yeah,
and then, you know, they've got Conor coming back, I think at the end of the year, I think they're going to maybe close out the year with the Conor McGregor fight.
Yeah. Which will be or start the next year, which is a normal thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think you can't be a company that's been going for 30 years and start criticising everyone else without having evidence of you doing exactly what you're saying or someone else is doing within that 30 years, because it's all recorded. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like the press conference the other day. He kind of contradicted himself, like, about not doing gimmicks. And then just with the BMF belt sat, like, right next to him.
BMF belt or CM Punk or James Toney or, like... It's, I mean, even go back to the women's fight. Like, he was so overly critical of women's MMA because of a singular experience that he'd had that he was adamant. And then all of a sudden, Strikeforce has got Ronda Rousey and she's making waves, same as Misha. And it's almost like those, like, greedy shark eyes come in. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, have you seen Finding Nemo?
Yeah.
You know, and Bruce the shark, and they see him, and he's now a reformed shark that doesn't eat fish anymore, and he smells that blood, and he goes, and you could just change.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's that greed. That's that, like, I'm not being funny. Dana's got billions and billions of pounds, or dollars, or whatever. But it's more about the flex. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We have the best. But ultimately, Ngannou's been there, he's proved himself, and now he's decided to do something else. Like, realistically, Dana could have paid Ngannou whatever he wanted for the next 20 years and it would not have even made a dent in Dana's wallet.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, they need to maintain that same narrative that they've always done since they've been coming up, because the fighter pay has always been a question. And obviously, yeah, there's a lot of things that we don't see. There's a lot of shit behind the scenes where there's so many departments, so many areas across the globe that are part of the UFC that still need paying, even though, like, the PI or whatever it is. But at the same time, people aren't daft. Like, if these fighters don't turn up, you're not going to make fuck all. So it's only like when someone like Conor came along and started banging a drum that he went, hold on a minute, I'm making you a fuckload of money. And they're like, yeah. He's like, well, can I have more than what you're paying me? And they're like, thing is, mate, there's not a lot in the pot. And it's like, well, no, I just filled the pot. The pot's overflowing, dude. Yeah, well, because Conor would be the same type of person, I think, as Ngannou, that would be like, do you know what then? Someone else is going to give me a fucking shitload. Because you've seen it before, like with Eddie Alvarez. Eddie Alvarez, underground king, champion in different organisations, came over here, beat RDA, got the belt, proved himself. And then when his contract was up, instead of staying with the three letters that was obviously the most important to him at the time, he ended up going to one. And it's happened all over the place.
Well, the one thing, I think, especially because, you know, obviously the agreement that Ngannou's had with PFL being the head of Africa, and he's going to start, you know, putting on shows within that region, which I think is going to be class, massive, by the way. It's going to be awesome. There's so much like talent that's, they're just, you know, that hasn't had the resources or whatever in that region.
Or the opportunity.
Yeah. So, and it's going to be pretty cool. Like, imagine having like PFL in like Nigeria or, you know, like sub-Saharan Africa and those kind of places. Like,
but the stories you're going to get and these characters that are going to be introduced, because the opportunities that people have had in that area of the world aren't the same as here. It's like when you hear like someone's come over from Mexico or somewhere like that and they've struggled and struggled and now they've made it because they got to the big show. Whereas it's a different journey. We know Ngannou's journey, but not everyone can do that. So the amount of raw talent that is going to be around, that give it 5-10 years, they're going to be household names, and it's going to be a massive new building block for Africa as a whole, or whatever Ngannou does. Because I mean, anyone could probably go over there now and put together half a dozen fights quite quickly and quite easily, because people are still into it. They're still training. Might not be doing it exactly the same way. It's a bit like Rocky IV. You know, when you see Ivan Drago with all the digital printouts and all that stuff, and then Rocky's just beating the shit out of a side of ham.
To be fair, did you see PFL posted, because I think Lewis McGrillan's signed with PFL now, and they released a video yesterday on their social media, and it was kind of like they painted him as like a robot or like a cyborg being built. It was a pretty cool video. But yeah, he's a good talent that's coming to the PFL. Exciting, like British fighter. But yeah, going back to that Ivan Drago thing, it was pretty cool, the video they put out about him.
But I think sometimes it smacks a bit of desperation. You know, when someone will turn around and go, I don't know where the money's coming from. You're like, hold on. UFC has been propped up by Vegas, which is like the shadiest place in the fucking world. Do you know what I mean? And you know, and like anything, F1, football, all these things, it's like it's billions and billions of pounds. And you're going to start questioning where it's like, it's either happening or it's not. Like when they start getting, like even with companies like fashion companies, like Nike, they've got found out that Nike were using sweatshops. But people still buy Nike. They're like, well, okay, it doesn't affect me that much.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't know, it's a little bit desperate. But I think if I was the PFL, they're making the move now. Once they've sort of engaged this movement, then they're just going to have to hold on and just like carry on. Do you know what I mean? It's really easy to be bullied out of something or to be intimidated out of something. A bit like we were talking about Scott Coker last week. But I mean, it all comes down to, if they put the stuff on, people will watch it. And the more names that they get that they can recognise, and it doesn't matter if it's the lower cards, the lower level people, if you've got someone on there that you recognise, like I was saying before about Bellator, I will always enjoy it more if I know a bit more about the fighter. And it's not because I don't follow Bellator, I do. But the UFC is such a big machine that you are constantly fed lots of new talent that you have to digest. Whereas Bellator, you might catch it on BBC and it's not as many fights, and they kind of focus around the main events or like the title fights. So you get to know half a dozen or a few, but it's not the same sort of engagement. Does that make sense?
No, yeah, for sure. And the thing is, with the thing that UFC always will hold at the moment as well is just like the value of what a UFC title represents. As you know, obviously, if you're an MMA fighter, that's the ultimate dream, is to be the UFC champion. And I think until other promotions kind of reach that level of, you know, same value, I guess, it's always going to be the top point.
Well, it's the transition of the fighter, isn't it? Because when you go to Bellator and you look at Bellator, you go, okay, you've got a light heavyweight champion in Ryan Bader. He got beat a load of times in the UFC. So they can sort of, they can sign that off in their own head. All right, the Pitbull brothers. Yeah, you're really good. But you've never tried the UFC. Mm. So then it's justified again. Or you might have someone in there that they go, all right, well then a previous UFC fighter that's now in Bellator has beaten one of them. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So it's always like that easily justifiable to say, well, they're still not the best. Whereas this is, I think maybe what has shaken the UFC a little bit more is the fact that because Ngannou has essentially still got the belt, he's taking it to the PFL, and that validates the PFL to say, yeah, normally you've got to get to the UFC to prove yourself and make and show that you're the best in the world. Whereas because Ngannou's not lost the belt, it validates the heavyweight division in PFL.
Yeah.
I mean, in an ideal world for the PFL, if John Jones hadn't come back, it would have made it a lot more solid, because then you've got a really like broken down heavyweight division that's kind of looking for a king. Whereas the way that John Jones came back and destroyed Cyril Garn, it keeps it interesting, because then that keeps the same talks about John and Francis.
Yeah. So I was speaking to Dan and Veronica about it yesterday, like who would you like to see as like Ngannou's next opponent as well. And there's been a lot of names, I think, floating around, but and I know he's going to go into boxing first. Like, I know he's kind of called out Anthony Joshua. Like, what do you think to that if it happens?
I don't know. Like,
if I was Anthony Joshua, I wouldn't take that fight.
No,
just in like the, just based off like his current, I mean, obviously he's coming off a win, but you know, he's lost the title, and there's been a little bit of concern around his
drive.
Yeah.
I think it's always difficult for the pro in their field. So like when Conor went and fought Mayweather, he lost nothing because that's not his game.
Mm-hmm.
He had a reasonable show of himself, but he lost nothing. Same as if Anthony Joshua said, do you know what? I'll come to MMA, I'll fight you at MMA, and got submitted. You wouldn't, like, the next time he boxed, you wouldn't be like, oh, here's that guy that loses all the time. Do you know what I mean? He doesn't take anything off, because it's a completely different discipline. Yeah, within mixed martial arts, there is boxing, but it's not the same concentration of trainer or anything. And obviously, when you see people like Anthony Joshua that has been doing this forever, and the footwork and the feints and the head, everything is so different. So for Anthony Joshua, being with it being in boxing, he's got a bit more to lose, because essentially he should be the one that puts this away.
Yeah, yeah.
The same as like with Tyson Fury, not Tyson Fury, Fury and Jake Paul.
Yeah. Like, I mean, Tommy Fury.
Tommy, luckily he got the decision.
Yeah.
But he had a lot more to lose than Jake, because Jake's making a name for himself, but then he's come up against someone that's essentially a bigger name in that industry, and he should lose to him.
There's a lot of heritage and history within that name as well. Dude. And like, you know.
Yeah, I don't know if we'd have seen Tommy again.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But
based off what his granddad said anyway.
Oh, his dad.
Dad. Oh, yeah. Shit, yeah.
Yeah. So, mate, this is the thing. It is really, really difficult. That's why Brock Lesnar had such a pull, because he came over, and not only did he come over and succeed, like his first fight, he lost.
Mm-hmm.
You know that.
Who's that, sorry?
Brock.
Brock Lesnar. Oh, what, in the UFC?
No, the first one in the UFC he lost, but he had, like, I think he's lost one before that.
Right.
But he lost his first one to Frank Mir. So he didn't give up. I mean, he lost nothing from it. He didn't go back to the wrestling, but he then carried on and found a way to maybe stay on his feet. Because obviously it was a weird stoppage that it was either Mario Yamasaki or Steve Mazzagatti that got involved because he was hitting him in the back of the head. And then Frank just wrapped up the most beautiful fucking knee bar you've ever seen. So it's levels to the game because obviously it's not wrestling, it's jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. So because Brock was so big and could impose his will on that current heavyweight division, he stayed relevant. But then when you got people like Overeem and Velasquez that came along and they're like, hold on.
Yeah. The fight I always remember with Brock is the Overeem one.
Beautiful.
Like where he just, what does it need his body to shit?
But I think Brock had just had diverticulitis and he'd had like, God knows how many miles of intestines removed and stuff.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's all a bit tender. But as much as I never particularly liked Brock, he bought a great audience, he bought a great following, and he kind of proved that he could do it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he only ever, like, his stock only ever rose until, was it UFC 100 or 200, sorry, when he fought Mark Hunt, and it was all like, I don't need to be tested for steroids. You're like, okay.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But I wouldn't mind seeing Ngannou box. I think until we see it, there's nothing to break down or nothing to know because we know he can throw a punch. But foot movement in boxing is fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. It's so different. And like Anthony Joshua, if you're stood still for a millisecond, a stationary target in boxing is so unheard of in comparison to like the MMA world you're watching for someone about to either take your legs out, do a single leg, double leg, take your knee, anything, like lower leg kicks, to know that if you can land a couple of lower leg kicks on people, that's going to slow down the attack. So that's like an insurance for later on in the fight. But if you can't do any of that, and it's essentially just your hands. I watched a bit of the Conor McGregor documentary and he was saying that...
Oh yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
I've watched a bit. Yeah, and he was like, I locked a load of my tools away. And you think, yeah, it's weird. Like, it must be harder to reverse train and be like, no, I can't do that. That's not okay. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Is it a good documentary? I've not actually started watching it yet. It's four episodes.
I mean, I think it'll always be good because it's on the sport that we love. So it keeps your interest. I mean, it shows you how emotionally insane this whole thing is.
What is it based around his period before, like around the Khabib fight?
Yeah.
And then like post that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then up until the Cowboy fight and then obviously the pandemic hit.
Poirier. I don't know if the Poirier fights are in there because I think it's like essentially it's him coming back.
Right, okay.
From the ankle. Because the ankle was Poirier, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So it starts with Conor sat in a hospital bed and them talking to him about his ankle and him saying, I knew it was going to happen. I could feel something. And I think because we've lived through it from this side of the curtain and we were a part of the whole time he was being filmed, to see it behind the curtain is really interesting. You see him obviously finding out that he's going to have a girl and they obviously like he's hanging out with his kids and his family and you see a different side to him. But then, I don't know, like with the whole Khabib thing, I don't think he'd found his flow for a couple of years because obviously it was a couple of years off, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously he went from being a bit brash, calling people out, saying what he was going to do, when he was going to do it. And then he did the Mayweather thing and he was still aggro. But then he came back and he seemed quite humble and quite chill. But obviously Khabib really seemed to rile something in him, especially with the Artem thing.
Yeah.
Which you look back now.
That's what it all kind of stemmed from, wasn't it?
Yeah. But when you watch it, you can see the unraveling. Like knowing what you know now, if you're a betting man watching it at the time, you can see Khabib sat there really stoic and just being like, yeah, no worries. Yeah, you. And it's almost like a bully. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like a bully getting their comeuppance.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say that Conor's necessarily a bully. I think the character that he portrays sometimes can be over the top, but that is from a different upbringing, especially with our sort of world, with the banter and the aggro. And like a lot of it can bounce off. Whereas Khabib wasn't brought up like that.
Yeah.
And I think it was almost that, like, it was almost his destiny to say, this ain't going to go any further, mate.
Well, it was funny, you know, when he came back for the second Poirier fight, but the first in that too.
Yeah.
Back to back.
So his second out of the three.
Yeah, yeah. When he came back in, it was Fight Island. It was the headline of one of the Fight Island cards, I think, early last year.
And they were best mates.
Yeah, and he came back like super humble. Like he looked different, and like it's just he's kind of one of them personalities that can kind of sway one, mate. Really one end or the other. There's no like middle ground for him.
Almost bipolar. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Same person, but just like it's like. Because he went all out being the nicest, most humble, I'm going to give you some money for your charity and all this shit. And then next minute he's calling out his missus on Twitter.
Yeah.
He like, I don't know. I know we've spoke about it before with fighters. Is it a case that sometimes, because it's a difficult game and it can be, I can imagine it could be quite lonely, especially when it's all on you. I know obviously you get your training camp, you've got your team and all the rest of it, but ultimately it's down to you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if because he felt like he'd missed a step or he'd been out of the game a little bit or he'd overtrained that he was like, do you know what? I'm just going to be nice. And then because it didn't work out for him, that plan's now scrapped.
That's
the reason. The reason I didn't win was because I was too nice. Okay, I'm going to be really fucking horrible. And then that also didn't work. And I don't think he was necessarily at peace with himself during, because the first Poirier fight, if you watch it, I mean, the whole embedded and everything, he's riding Poirier like a fucking Skegness donkey. He's on him all the time. And he's got that hunger and that drive because he's not got the millions at this point.
The first one, is this before?
Ever.
Yeah.
But then when he hits him, it catches him. It's like a really weird coughing strike and it's like it goes to the back of Poirier's head.
Mm-hmm.
So the first fight was, because it finished so soon, he never got a real taste of Dustin Poirier. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I get you.
It was reasonable, but it wasn't a full, like when he fought Max Holloway, they went rounds. Whereas because Poirier got taken out of it pretty quick and Conor obviously was like, there you go, that's what I do. I'm not saying he underestimated him the second time, but Poirier, all he did was fight until that point and got better and better.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think as well with that first fight, Poirier was a different fight. It was at featherweight, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, you know, is well established now in the lightweight division and obviously he's a bigger fighter and that's like a more suited weight class to him.
Yeah.
And then obviously the second fight was at lightweight and the third fight. Yeah. And like you said, I don't think in the first fight, McGregor really got an actual taste of like Poirier's full potential.
Not at all. And I don't know if, because it's like anything, if you've done something once, you like to think you could do it again. And obviously, if Conor's coming back and the big fight is Poirier and he's being humble and cordial and nice and all the rest of it, is he not necessarily looking past him, but is he thinking, right, well, I suppose once I've done Poirier, I could probably get a title shot, get my belt back, feel like I'm complete again. Because there was always that thing of, well, you never defended your belt, or like you moved weight class and you won it, but you didn't defend it. Or going from having all this like jewelry of these belts and then all of a sudden not having them, it became a part of him.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Especially the champ. And when you lose a few in a row, you're not the champ anymore. But in your head, you feel like you are. Like, I still feel 17. I'm 42.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine what it feels like when you've worked your entire life to get this thing that is then now hanging over you like a massive weight. And I suppose if he had thought to himself, I'm going to do him like I did before. So I'm not saying he overlooked him or looked past him, but he may have just taken it a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And then when it didn't work out, I don't know if he was more angry with himself because he was like, fuck, because now not only does that mean you're not getting a title shot next, it means you've got a loss against someone that you've beat already. So you, to anyone else, you've already done them once, why haven't you done them again?
What do you, because obviously the Ultimate Fighter is starting, I think, at the end, on the 30th of May.
Yeah.
Are you going to watch that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because I didn't watch the Ortega Volkanovski one.
Oh, it's all right.
Yeah. I didn't because the only thing I didn't like about it was those like weird, like it seemed very scripted in the sense of like, you know, the whole pranks and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I just wasn't really into it. I saw a lot of it on like social media and whatnot.
Yeah.
But then there was the Nunes Pena one, wasn't there? I didn't watch that one either.
Yeah, I've always watched them. I mean, like I said before, I just try and consume anything just because I enjoy.
Yeah.
And especially the journeys of the fighters, because some of them could be...
I think it's the reality TV element that I don't particularly
like. And I don't know if that's a ratings thing, because they put so much impetus on the Ultimate Fighter season one finale with Forrest and Stefan, that now it can't ever just be fights. Because obviously The Contender is a very similar thing, but it's almost like a grown-up version. Do you know what I mean? It's like the Lexus to the Ultimate Fighters of Toyota, Corolla, banged out 2004. Do you know what I mean? So when you look at the Ultimate Fighter, and it came down to ratings, because essentially when it started, season one, massive, and retrospectively massive. Season two was kind of boring because they had Matt Hughes against Rich Franklin, who were friends and in different weight classes and didn't fight.
Mm.
Season three came and it was Tito against Ken Shamrock. Bad blood, fucking massive. It was amazing because there was just a lot of aggro, and you got someone like Bisping in there against Ross Poynton, and Ross Poynton and Bisping both came over from England. Bisping's got a much better pedigree and title, not title reign, but like record.
Yeah.
And obviously he's got Ross Poynton, who's a typical British bloke that's like, yo, I'm still rock hard. And Bisping's like, well, I'll smash you, mate. And he kind of did. So then it went to season four, which was that the comeback? And that's when they didn't even have new fighters. They had previous UFC fighters that there was no real coaches. Like, people came in like GSP and different bits and bobs, but it wasn't, was that season four? Was that season six? I can't remember. Either way, odds and even. No. Yeah.
Should we have a look?
No, I think I'm right. But either way, what I was trying to say was it kind of went, odds were good, evens were boring. So what they started noticing was all the antics.
What do you mean by odds and...
So season one is an odd number, right, season two is an even number, season three is odd, season four is even.
Right.
So, and it kind of followed through, because then season five, I think, was BJ Penn against Jens Pulver. And Jens Pulver, one of the contestants was Joe Lauzon, and Joe Lauzon had recently knocked Pulver out. So BJ Penn just stood there at the whole beginning of the picks and was like, who wants to be on my team? And nearly everyone put their hand up. And you could see Jens Pulver's soul just go, boop. And it was fucking horrible, because this guy beat BJ Penn. Yeah, he took his belt off him. He made his name off that. So the whole reality pantomime of all of it, it got completely out of hand. Because, like, there was one time where the fighters, as I understand it, can order food and stuff, and they can ask what they want. And someone had this big, it was like a fruit salad or something, and someone just pissed in it.
Yeah, thing is, I don't think it's, I think maybe because of those kind of antics and whatnot, it's kind of portrayed a little bit differently now, isn't it?
Yeah, like, well, they kind of forced that.
Right, okay.
So, like, you had people, was it Kaplan that got knocked out? He was saying, oh, no one can knock me out. So he gets knocked out, and you think to yourself, and that was the Frank Mir season, and you're like, hold on. Like, you've just been sparked on camera, unsanctioned, no gloves, in a toilet, and you're on a fighting program that essentially you could, like, if you get sparked like that, commission, you're out for however long. But clearly it's ratings. So it was a weird do care. And then the biggest, most mental was Bisping against Mayhem Miller. And Mayhem Miller's always been fucking insane. So it's never been essentially his fighting style. He's just batshit crazy. So the only way he was getting a rise out of Bisping was completely fucking with him, like putting donkeys in their room and fucking fire extinguishers. And it went insane. It went fucking above and beyond. And I don't know if the fighters that are coming up now have got that same intent. Because I wouldn't move into a house and be like, I'm going to piss in his salad. And I wouldn't expect anyone to piss in my salad. But that's what you kind of need for those little 10-second clips to get people hooked in. Whereas I don't know what it's going to be like.
Well, I think personally, it's going to be very entertaining, purely just because of McGregor back in it. But also, I think he's kind of tailored to that sort of content that the UFC want to produce as well. Like, he's a very exciting character that, you know, that people always tune into. So I think this one, in terms, I don't know what the other two seasons were like, but I think this is going to do like way better than previous seasons.
And I think it feeds that type of ego.
Yeah, I'm going to watch this season.
I'll watch it.
But I think if it was anyone else other than McGregor, I probably wouldn't watch it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know what. I think it's just, like I said, it's just maybe the reality TV element of it is more. Like I watched the Dana White's Contender series, but the Ultimate Fight. I think it's just the reality TV element that I'm not particularly that interested in.
Well, they did. To be fair, they wound it in a bit and they changed it from being, because it was almost like a Survivor format when it started.
Mm.
They had challenges. And so, like, there would be challenges every week. On season one, Randy against Chuck, it was like these fucking weird challenges that they'd have to do, which essentially doesn't fit in the whole format of fighting because you don't want someone to get injured by falling off a climbing frame.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Or an assault course. So, it did move heavily into the fucking real wives of whatever.
Yeah.
And I think part of me, because I watch a lot of it when I'm working. So I'll sit and I'll watch the fight, but sometimes it can just be on.
Mm-hmm.
I do that with a lot of stuff. I've gone through seasons and seasons of shit like Ink Master and The Office and different, just to be on in the background, but then something will grab my attention. And obviously when it's the Ultimate Fighter, it's normally the fight. But I do like to get to learn about people and know their story. That's where we met Court McGee and found out that he had like crippling drug addiction, and look at him now, same as Matt Brown. And even Chris Lieben, season one, he had some fucking issues. And to see what he's done with his career and where he's got to now and how he's achieved, it's really nice to see. I mean, he's not a well man, but you get to know a lot more about them by it being the reality. Like Stace has always watched fights with me, especially before we had kids, but she would always watch The Ultimate Fighter because of the reality side of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not something that Conor can necessarily lose, because if one of his team doesn't win a fight, that's not his fault. And if he can still get a rise out of anyone on the other team, he will.
Yeah. I think there is a lot of that in this season from what I've seen, like little clips and like the way they've promoted it. There's a lot of like back and forth between Chandler and McGregor and whatnot.
Yeah, I don't know how Chandler's going to handle it. Yeah. I don't know.
It's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to it. I think it starts on like May the 30th, is it?
Okay.
Or something.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to seeing how long Chandler's fuse is.
Yeah.
Because it's like...
He's all right. I think he'd be all right with that. I don't know. He doesn't strike me as the person who, I don't think you'd be able to get much of a rise out of him.
Yeah.
I don't think. He doesn't strike me as someone who takes a lot of stuff personally.
Yeah. And what I just, it's the problem is, it only, that there's it, that chip and chip and chipping away. Like when we saw him against Faber, you could see that it was slowly getting to him. But, essentially, he rose above it. Like he managed to cope.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was even like, when you've not got a good comeback. I saw this on the documentary, on the Conor's documentary, and Khabib was saying something, and because Conor didn't have a comeback, he went bah, 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 bah. Yeah. And then a real visceral fuck you, and it wasn't like a thought out, well positioned attack. And when you see Conor and Faber stood outside the doors waiting to go through for the fight, and he's saying, you look like a 40-year-old skateboarder, which is like, it's perfect. And it's bang on, because I'm dressed very similar. And I get that. I understand that. But because Faber wasn't expecting it and he thought he was getting on, they were doing all right. He tried to take a shot at Conor's shoes or something.
Yeah,
and he was
python.
Like, they're python. And but because he's Irish, he's like, they're python. And he's like, oh, python. And you think, Uriah, you'd have probably been better off not saying anything. Or saying, came on my skateboard, dude. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
Owning it. And I think because they don't necessarily always get his sense of humor. Like Conor can be fucking nullified by anyone else in a pub, anywhere in UK, Ireland, anything with banter. Like when Jeremy Stevens shouted, who the fuck is, oh, when Conor said, who the fuck is that guy? If he'd have just turned around and gone, ask your mom, he'd have been like, What? And then that would have probably flipped him off because that's disrespectful in his act. But ultimately, that's the banter that anyone else would give him. But Jeremy Stevenson went, okay, sorry. I won't say anything else.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, man. So I'm always keen to see if, because I like to see that fuse just break away and be like, fuck, man, this is going to get to a point. Yeah, it's going to get spicy.
I think that's why I'm looking forward to most, just like the back and forth and like the banter that, and I think McGregor's going to bring that element to it that it probably hasn't had in the past two seasons, like back, you know.
Yeah, what he's
since the resurgence of it anyway.
Well, yeah, because they seem to be getting on. I saw one clip and it was where they were talking about the weight classes and he was like, we'll do it 185. And Chandler was like, yeah, okay, if you want. And he's like, you do what you're told. And it is like it's a dad thing. It's like a dad, like a put down in front of your mates. Do you know what I mean? Because he's so fast with that sort of quick jibe that Chandler's lured into this false sense of security. Like, oh no, we're friends. And then all of a sudden he's just been fucking put out. And it's like, motherfucker. And he's not got there's nothing there to come back really quickly because he's like, you'll do what you're told as well. What?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's strange seeing people on the back foot, but I am looking forward to it. So if that's May the 30th, we've got that coming up. So that's something to look forward to.
I just wish I know obviously that McGregor's not in the testing pool at the minute and he's going through the process of getting back into it so he can fight. But I just wish that had happened before so you can end the season and
of course. Be like,
yeah, let's look forward to the McGregor-Chandler fight.
Well, that's why, like season one and two, the coaches didn't fight. Chuck and Randy fought, but not at the end of the season. Season two, it was, if you get to watch it, it was the fucking ropiest. I think it was Rich Franklin's debut against Ken Shamrock on the end of the Ultimate Fighter. I can't say it was rigged because that would be slander, but fuck me, it was bad.
Yeah.
And then season three was Tito Chuck. And then they started realizing, hold on, we're going to get these fuckers to fight.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it was obviously season four was the comeback. So season five was BJ and Jens, which was a bloodbath. But they made sure that we had that. Because even when it was Tito against Chuck in one of the seasons, and Tito was injured. So instead of him playing the season out, now bear in mind how big Tito was, how much of a draw he was, all the other shit that comes with it, how much Dana tells you. He was his fucking manager. They were friends. But Tito was fucking there forever. And as soon as they found out that he wasn't going to fight Chuck at the end of the season, they scrapped Tito from the show and brought Rich Franklin in. And that's when Chuck head kicked Rich Franklin and broke his arm in the first round, and then Chuck on like the last few seconds headbutted Rich Franklin's fist and was knocked out, and we obviously you know the rest. But they sacked Tito off.
Yeah.
So it's not even like they went, all right, well, because you've been a company man, we'll look after you, you stay on the card, you're all good. But then you got someone like Connor who says, I like steroids and medicine that will allegedly, I would like to stay out of the testing pool, please. And they're like, oh yeah, we really like a fight. Then it's like, well, I don't want to. And they went, okay. And it's such a weird thing to have.
It would still be great, obviously. I think that fight's going to happen at the end of the year. Well, from what I hear, it's like John Jones, November, MSG, and then December, McGregor Chandler. I think that's what they've got planned anyway. But
so how long does Conor have to be in the testing pool?
Is it 6 months, I'm guessing? If that's the...
Yeah, well, we're at the end of May.
Yeah.
I mean, how hot are you pissing?
Yeah.
Are you melting cups?
Yeah, it's odd that it's so, like, open and out there. Was it Bisping? I think Bisping said something the other day about, like, I know McGregor likes steroids in the gear, but he needs to get back on like porridge and protein shakes.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Once you get that, it's not even a shortcut, because someone was saying about TJ Dillashaw, after he fought Aljo, he must have felt so depleted or whatever it was, because obviously he'd just had surgery and tried to recover naturally after his whole steroid debacle from before. And they were saying, he's not retired. He's just getting some happy juice to make sure that it's fixed properly.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why it came out about Anderson Silva, wasn't it? You know, when Anderson broke his leg and they were saying, did he pop after that? I think he popped after that, didn't he?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, but it was, the trouble is, some things fix you better than others.
Mm-hmm.
And like the age old time in this game is probably the biggest curse, because like you think you've broken your leg that severely that you're now 36, 37. You've got to wait and wait and wait for it to be good enough to basically throw it like a baseball bat against someone else's leg.
Yeah, yeah.
Mate, I mean, I've hurt myself before and then been really like gingerly walking on my own ankle or something because it's slightly twisted.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't like to start throwing it at someone's face.
You can almost sympathise in a way with them, you know, going through that process of doing steroids or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Because if, you know, their entire career is based around their physical condition, and if there's a quicker way to speed up that process of healing or getting it better,
yeah,
then, you know, I can kind of relate in terms of, you know, yeah, why they would do it.
Well, you can understand, and especially when the times before, because there was a time before they had insurance, and if they didn't fight, they didn't get paid. When the UFC bought the insurance in, the amount of people that would actually take advantage of it, because before they were putting themselves through fucking hell.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially they still needed to pay the bills. They still needed to take care of their family. But the other thing as well is the evolution of the steroids and all the things that are available.
Mm-hmm.
Like back in the day, certain things would show up, but then you have stuff like Lance Armstrong where he was flushing his entire blood out. Not his entire, not just come like a plastic bag, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the way they were doing that was super advanced.
But the thing is, they would, like, I don't know a lot about steroids. I've never like looked at them or whatever, as you can clearly see. But, you know, as long as it's not being used in competition, but then you can go, like what McGregor's doing, he's not in the pool at the minute,
yeah,
and he's doing it, and he did it because of his ankle, and like it speeds up that process.
Yeah,
obviously he's done it to get a bit swollen, a bit bigger as well.
Yeah,
but you know, as long as he's not using that in competition, then what's the debate in that sense? Like, is it still okay that he's using it out of competition, but then he's coming off it to go back into competition?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is that still viewed as like a, you know, a bad thing?
I think, like, when you look at someone like TJ Dillashaw or anyone, let's use someone that's not popped before. If they're out of the limelight and essentially retired or whatever you want to call it, it's different. But because McGregor is so prominent within the majority of fight sports, like he was at a boxing match the other day, and obviously that it's all about him. He's at a bare knuckle fight. It's all about him. Because he's so, like, in the mainstream all the time, and they've booked him on something that essentially he should be fighting at the end of, it just seems like extra rules have been made for him.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas
I don't think
that would, like, if it was anyone else, and like DC's like, I'm going to be out for 6 months because I've got a, like, oh, Ngannou, I've got ACL surgery or whatever it is. I'm going to have 18 months out. So I'm going to have the surgery. I'm going to have 6 months on the fucking pop or whatever it is to get it fixed. Then I'm going to be training, making sure it's good. So he's taking his own time to get him back to where he needs to be. It's not been vocal about it. It's not necessarily something that he's got to tell everyone about. But he's now clean because he's been retested since he's flushed out his system. But because Conor's always in the limelight and he's the most, well, one of the most well-known fighters there is, the rules just are always changing.
Mm.
And that's the difficult thing, because
I think in like certain states and whatnot, obviously they have a different commission, different governing body and whatnot. So certain things are legal and certain things are not, from my understanding.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you can get picked up for one thing in one.
Yeah.
And other ones
are pictograms. Just like the smallest of small. But the problem is that then arises suspicion of how much was there, has it been flushed, what's left? Because then it's not, essentially, this is the fight game. So it's people's lives are on the line. And you can't have someone who's just juiced off their tits that could essentially kill someone.
Because,
I mean, like weed at one point was the most fucking governed thing in the UFC. Like, Nick Diaz got a five fucking year suspension. Imagine that. Like, your entire, that's your life, your job. And your age in this game is the most important thing, because you're training and you're fighting regularly and you're staying relevant, to then all of a sudden go, I have 5 years off. Fucking, how do I look after? And the money wasn't the best before that. So it's not like he had a massive nest egg that he could go, do you know what? I'm just going to kick back. He was fucked. And it's not like they come back afterwards and go, well, look, due to loss of earnings, because we were fucking idiots. Like, I'm not being funny. You've been cooked. I've been cooked. It's not like you fight much better or much worse. You just...
It's a funny debate, because I feel like it's probably an enhancing thing for some people and not for others. Like, I imagine someone like Nick Diaz. What was the fight? Oh, God, what fight is it? Is it Sato?
Takemi Sagaki? No.
Where he won with the triangle, but he was kind of getting...
In Pride?
Yes.
It was...
Oh, God. Who is it?
Is it the Fireball Kid? What's his name?
Let me get his record up.
There's
that fight where he's had, I don't know, what did he take, like a bunch of edibles before or something? And he was like, he had like a certain amount of like milligrams in his system, and he won with the triangle. What fight was it?
Yeah, well, jiu-jitsu cooked is different, because you're rolling and you're fluid and you're loose and all the rest of it.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I mean. So for some people, it could probably be...
Other people are just up there paranoid thinking, are you going to hit me?
But also because it's a pain relief as well, like maybe when you get hit, it doesn't hurt as much or whatever, I don't know.
Or you could be hurt more. I don't know. It's just, I would love to see a league where it's just all, it's okay. And everyone's just jacked to the fucking gills. And just like proper beefcakes. But did you see, talk about Jack to the Gills, did you see the Power Slap promo that they've got that new, there's a new guy that's come along and he's like 420 pounds or something. And he got on the scales whilst eating a chocolate bar.
You told me about this earlier.
I was like,
fucking hell.
How the fuck is that a normal thing?
So I think the fight that I'm talking about, I think, is Hayato Sakurai, sorry.
Yeah.
Sakurai.
I think so.
He won by armbar.
Yeah.
He was like baked off his...
Yeah.
If I'm wrong, I'm sorry, but I think it's that fight where, he was like baked off his head and he won by armbar.
But yeah, then got 5 year suspension.
Yeah.
What the fuck? But then you look at even when you look at people getting banned for all sorts of shit. Look at Paul Daly. Paul Daly lashed out at Koscheck, who was a douchebag, needed lashing out at, got banned never to return. And then you see other people do whatever the fuck they want. And it's like, okay. I think the problem is, because the top of the tree is sort of governed by a grumpy teenager in Dana, that he can just kind of make up what he wants as he goes.
Yeah.
It's... I always wonder what's going to happen when he's gone, because obviously, like, when the Fertitta brothers were there, Lorenzo was heavily involved, but wasn't necessarily the voice, but he was a bit more grown up and he was a businessman. But I still hear Dana mention Lorenzo and like he's met up with him and he sees him. So obviously he's still got a little bit of influence, or he can be involved. And I don't know what's going to happen with Dana. What's next? Once Dana's gone, unless he's completely disgraced, like let's say something happens so bad that he's completely disgraced and they restructure the whole thing, how the UFC will look, but also what would happen, who's the next Dana, and does he take a Lorenzo position where he sits back and still pulls a couple of strings?
I reckon McGregor's going to buy it.
Do you reckon?
I don't know, nah. It's just, I could see something like that happening, man.
Like UFC. It'd be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's not as if he's not got enough money to, but yeah, it would be funny if something like that happened. I don't know if it would benefit or if it would be he's a fighter, so I think he would be very much in support of the fighters and, you know.
I think he was difficult enough to control before he had money.
Yeah.
Now he's got money, he's a fucking live wire and he's got no one to really answer to. And if he was in that position with that much power, I think the fights could be interesting as fuck. The press conferences, everything business like related
of the MMA
would be would be gold. But mate, any investors or anyone involved in that would be fucking terrified of every minute he was outside the business, like at a casino or driving his car or doing anything, because you've essentially given a fucking baby a shot behind you. Do you know what I mean?
Speaking of terrified, I know we spoke briefly last week about UFC 291 and obviously the BMF belt being regurgitated, but the rest of the card. And one fight I wanted to ask you about was the Bobby Green and Tony Ferguson fight as well. What were your thoughts on that? Because in my eyes, based off like Ferguson's last few performances, he's nowhere near the same fighter.
No.
But I've watched Bobby Green in his last few performances and he's still piecing people up.
Yeah.
So I'm a little bit worried for Tony.
I think what they've seen is the fact that Bobby Green takes risks. Bobby Green fights with his hands down. Mm-hmm. He is a bit more of a seasoned veteran, so we have seen him get stopped. So it's not like he's some young up-and-coming bull that's just going to bulldoze. Yeah. Like, against Chandler, you've got a fucking muscle shark that is essentially trying to take your head off with every fucking shot. Bobby Green's a bit more, well, he seems to have been recently. Like you say, he's piecing people up nicely and his hands are low, but he's making that adjustment to touch people and then find his range. So it's slightly safer for Tony, but at the same time, because his hands are so low and Tony's so unorthodox, it makes it a really interesting fight. Well, for me anyway, especially because they're both old school guys as well. You're seeing a Hamzat run through fucking Nate Diaz and you go, I know what's going to happen. Like when we watched Jelton Almeida the other day, I knew exactly what was going to happen. I'd made a fresh cup of tea. I'd done everything right. I'd got to the main event. I sat down outside. And by the time I'd taken like the first gulp of tea, it was done. And I was like, fuck, man. I wanted to enjoy this. But I knew it was coming. So if you put Tony Ferguson against Nate Landwehr or someone like that, or fucking Bobby Green against someone hungry, it's not the same. So like the Court McGee and the Matt Brown fight showed us the other day, it's just as exciting to have them back. And it could go either way for either of them, because I thought Court McGee was winning that and then Matt Brown just fucking iced him out. So I can never like take Tony out of the equation, because he is fucking insane. Like we met him, he was fucking bonkers. Like one of the most surreal. I didn't do any acid or LSD in Vegas, but that was the most fever dream induced fucking insane meeting I've ever had. And he didn't really say any words. He was just pulling faces and different expressions. And it was like someone had bet him, like, when these lads come up, don't say a word, but like get your point across. And he went, all right, I got this. And he's always been fucking mental. But I mean, didn't he get arrested the other day for flipping his truck?
Oh yeah, what was that?
DUI,
yeah. Driving under the influence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how different it is in America. In England, it's drink driving and you're banned for fucking God knows how long with DUIs in America.
Depends how far you are over the limit as well.
Okay.
I think in here, in this country.
Well, yeah, the limit's 30, 35.
Yeah, what's that, like a half glass of wine or it's like a pint?
A pint or 2 pints, depending on your frame. Like if me and you had 2 pints, we're probably at 60.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not like he's reaching the end of his career and he's settled. I think Tony's got a lot of shit burning in the back of his brain that he never got to fight Khabib, never got to fight Conor. Like, he had the interim belt and then was really crudely stripped of it. It wasn't like it was a discussion. Like, he stepped in, if you remember, helped out, got the interim, and then they were like, actually, no, fuck you, don't want you. And I can see how he would be feeling really shit about that, because he was always a company man. He was doing... Well, he always fought really well and he was winning a lot. And that's why the Khabib thing was tried to be set up so many times.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he's got a bit of a bee up his arse about what could have been or what should have been, which has distracted him and now got him to the point where he's a little unhinged or a lot unhinged. But when you put him into a cage with Bobby Green, then it should be nothing but fireworks.
Yeah.
But yeah, with the Chandler, he did seem to have missed a little step Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think ever since the Gaethje fight, I feel like, you know, in Rocky Five, where
he's fighting Tommy Gunn.
Yeah, but the reason that there's a part in it where Rocky says that Ivan Drago like broke something in him.
Yeah,
and it was like never recovered.
Yeah,
I feel like Gaethje did that to Ferguson,
mate.
Because I feel like I think that was like the first card after the pandemic as well, like the first card back.
Yeah.
Well, not after the pandemic, but they carried on during the pandemic, and that was the first big card back. And yeah, just like, I think going into that fight, it was very much like, yeah, you know.
You never know.
Yeah, Ferguson, you know, he wasn't really kind of teetering on the edge of, but I feel like the Gaethje fight and the punishment that he gave him just broke something and changed him as a fighter.
It's when you see him take that shot and he just sort
yeah,
of
it's like a wounded animal or something.
Yeah, like yeah. You think, I don't want to do this, but I've got to do this. And you hit it with a cricket bat and it looks and goes, why did you do that? You're like, oh God, fuck man, I'm going to have to do it again. You know what I mean? It's like yeah. Something off bottom. Or, you know, me, myself and Irene with Jim Carrey when yeah. The cow's in the road yeah. And he makes the decision to shoot the cow. And then the cow stays alive, so he tries to choke the cow to death. And then it's one of them where I'm not saying I'm not saying he's a cow, but when you hear those shots land off Gaethje.
Well, that's the thing. There wasn't a crowd at that point as well. And I've watched that fight back, you know, when they do like a recap or like, you know, the thrill and the agony thing they used yeah. to do. I think they made a video about it.
The agony like for him must have been like months.
Yeah, and it was like someone just like hitting the hits were like insane.
It's like, you know, when you hear someone throw a baseball into a glove.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like yeah. Just that slap, that, I don't know, it's really hard to describe the sound of someone's jaw getting hit flush and then being too tough for their own good. Because I can't imagine Gaethje would have been like, well, here comes another one, because he's just a fucking dog. He's a fighter. He's coming for you. But yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting, but is it something that Tony Ferguson, if he wins, it's ideal to go out on a win and he says, do you know what, I'm done? Or does he then remind himself that he was really good at this at one point and he goes, do you know what, I want the belt? And you're like, oh, Tony.
Yeah.
What happens?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, man. It's another fight on that card. I mean, we'll do like a proper breakdown of the whole card yeah. when it comes to it, same as we were with the other pay-per-views as well.
We'll do a fake picks.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, but we could do that.
We don't have any fights this weekend. No. So, yeah, we've got a week off. It's Bank Holiday weekend. Next week, I think, it's Kai Kara France and Amir Albazi.
Yeah.
War Room's up for that if you guys want to go check it out. But yeah, no fights this weekend to actually discuss or anything. Yeah.
No. What are you watching it? Have you got time to tell me what you're watching at the minute? Or
I have, yeah. No, we're good. We're good.
You all right?
I got a bit, I got to head off at 3 p.m., but yeah, I'm good for a few more minutes.
So what are you going to watch this weekend? What's the plan?
Well, we actually recently bought, I don't know if I told you, the Hogwarts Legacy game.
You did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've been smashing that and it's actually really good. If anyone's into Harry Potter, you would love it because it's like a GTA version of Hogwarts.
I'd love a hack that made it GTA-esque. So like you could be on your broomstick and you could like run people over. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
But, yeah. No, it's really good. There's like so much to it. The map's huge. Like there's a lot of like free roam element to it. So it's really good. We've been playing that. We've been watching a series called Yellow Jackets.
Yes, they watch that.
It's about women's high school soccer yes. team. They're in a plane crash and they get stranded in like I think like the forests of like Canada and North America and stuff. But then it kind of shoots back from that time to like their future selves.
Yeah,
and like all this stuff's like unraveling about what they did in the forest and during the time that they were the stranded and stuff. It's really entertaining. It's
yeah.
good.
Yeah. She's watched that. She's, it's one of them. We struggle because we like very similar things. So we've both got certain things that we will watch on our own.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter if you go through it. Like if I get downstairs and she's been still watching what we watched together, I'd be like, fuck man, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
So Yellow Jackets was something she'd picked up. And then I was sat working one day and I was like, I was asking a few more questions than I thought. And she's like, I can put it back to the beginning. And I was like, no, don't worry. This is yours. But it looks good.
it is good, man.
Christina Ricci's in it, right?
Yeah. She's in it. That Juliana Arquette. Is that her name? No, she's not in that.
No, it's her.
The girl from Dust Till Dawn and...
Well, she's a massive UFC fan.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, Juliette Lewis.
Juliette Lewis, yeah, she's in it. She plays like the kind of old...
Natural Born Killers. You've seen Natural Born Killers, haven't you?
Yeah. Natural Born Killers, of course, yeah. She's in it. It's really good. There's quite a dark element to it.
Okay.
Because there's this like undergoing theory that they were all like cannibals during this time.
Okay. So without giving too much away.
That's the underline. You know, if you Google it, it says that.
It's similar to Lost where it's like a bit dark.
Yeah, it is, but it's less like science fiction based.
I can live with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there is a kind of supernatural element to it.
Yeah.
But I've just finished the first season and the second season's just started,
Nice.
So we're going to get into that.
Something to go at. Okay.
But yeah, man.
Good. Well, I don't think I watched much different. We watched that 1923, which is the prequel to Yellowstone.
Oh, yeah.
And the one after 1883. I just like cowboys.
Yeah.
I'm all about cowboys, man. And
Have you watched Godless?
Not yet.
Oh, you should watch that. Yeah, if you like westerns, that's really good.
I just like the way that they just didn't fuck around. It was like, you're shit. No, you're dead. But if anyone's seen 1923, it's got Robson Green in it. Not Robson Green, Jerome Flynn. You won't remember Robson and Green.
Oh, I remember Robson Green.
Robson Green and Jerome Flynn. So
Robson Green's the British actor. Yeah. He had a brother who sang that song. I can't remember his name.
Well, they were in a series called Soldier Soldier.
Soldier Soldier, yeah.
So they used to sing Robson and Green. No, says Jerome Flynn. It's Robson Green, isn't it?
Yeah, Robson Green.
But what were they called? Robson and Jerome then? Or Green and Flynn? Don't know. I can't remember. They're in Soldier Soldier. Yeah. And they sang a load of croony songs. They were all good. And then they went on to do other stuff.
Yeah.
And Jerome Flynn's obviously been in fucking Game of Thrones and all this other stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's got the most weird accent in this fucking thing. And you know when you just can't get past someone's character? I can't engage with it because his accent is so shockingly bad. But he's got Harrison Ford in it as well. And I just... Anything where Han Solo's
the
there.
Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, he's the main dude.
Okay.
So it's kind of cool because there's something about Harrison Ford's voice that is comforting. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's because I grew up with Star Wars as a child of divorce and struggled for fucking structure, but Harrison Ford was there saying, I don't know, calm down, kid, whatever it was.
And
we watched that, so that was good. And then we watched another series with Harrison Ford in called Shrinking, which is about shrinks and therapy. And it's by... So do you remember Scrubs?
Yes.
You remember Dr. Cox, the main arsehole? Yes, well, not the old guy. His wife was a fucking psycho bitch, wasn't she?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Well, she's in it.
Okay.
And her actual husband writes it.
Right, okay.
And she doesn't play the same as the characters she normally plays. And in Scrubs, she's a neighbour. And Jason Segel's in it with Harrison Ford. And they are... Harrison Ford... And Jason Segel shrinks. And it's really good. It's really, really worth a watch. It was like really emotive, to be fair. It was one of them that everyone's going through struggles. And obviously you see a little bit of the insight in people's lives. But then you actually see the shrinks go through struggles. You're like, fucking hell, everyone's human. So it's kind of, you can tell when you're enjoying something when you burn through a season in like two or three days. You go, fucking hell, stayed up late.
Yeah. I was going to say as well, if you like westerns, I don't know if you've watched it as a film on Netflix, came out, I think it's been out about almost a year now, but The Harder They Fall. It's Idris Elba.
Yeah.
The dude from Creed 3, I forgot his name. He's also the bad guy in the new Ant-Man film.
I can't think of his
name. But yeah, he's like the main guy in it, and Idris Elba. And loads of other like big stars are in it. That's really good.
It's good.
Good Western. Because it's kind of like, there's like a bit of a modern spin on it as well, just with the music and the soundtrack and that. It's pretty cool.
I quite like that. Yeah, I'm a big fan. well, I've got to, because normally I just put Young Guns 1 or 2 on. You've seen Young Guns, haven't
you? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mate. Not for a long time, but I have seen it.
Watch it again. It's so worth it, honestly. It's the fuck it.
Yeah. Is that the, what's his name?
Emilio Estevez.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Keith Sutherland.
Yeah,
Keith
Doc.
Sutherland. Yeah. Yeah.
I Make You Famous.
Yeah.
And Chavez. Mate, honestly, it's fuck my favourite. We got that got banned at our house because there's 7 years between me and my oldest brother. So when I was whatever, 11, 12, whatever, he was like 4 or 5. And he was obsessed with Billy the Kid. And to the point where all he would watch was Young Guns.
Mm.
And obviously there's a little bit of like adult content in there. And people are just getting fucking murdered constantly. So yeah. They were like, one day I got home and there was a brand new, and this back in the day, this would have been what, 93, 94, no, not even that, 91, 92. There was a brand new video cassette of Thomas the Tank on the side. And I was like, holy shit. Because we didn't buy videos, just so you know, back, like, we didn't buy any videos. It was recorded off telly. It was borrowed or it was a video shop. Yeah. So to see a brand new VHS sealed on the side, I was like, the fuck's going on? It's no one's birthday. Like, where's the money come from for this? And it was essentially Will's methadone or methadrone, whatever it's called, to get him off of the fucking Young Guns crack. They introduced a Thomas the Tank video that then Young Guns mysteriously disappeared.
Like a reduced medication of some sort.
But it wasn't like, oh, well, this is going to affect every fucker. This is just Will. So basically he got a brand new Thomas video and yeah, well, I didn't get to watch Young Guns again. So I got banned. That and Bottom with Rick Mayall and Adrian Emerson. Bottom and Young Guns got fucking banned. Which is weird to think, like, if I said to my kids now, that's banned, they'd be like, fuck you. They go, all right, sorry.
Well, you could always just go upstairs and watch it on a tablet on off Amazon Prime anyway.
This is it. The only thing I can suggest for the same sort of thing for any parents out there, the modern day equivalent is now, we've got an app, which is probably the greatest thing we've ever got, and it's called Family Link. And basically on the app is both of my daughter's phones, tablets, everything.
Okay.
And you can just go turn it off.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And honestly, it's like Thanos's fucking glove. And you can be having the biggest argument with your kid and they'll be like, oh yeah, well, you know, you and you're, what? And they go, oh, no, they. And off it goes. Mate, it's the best.
It's like the red button of your house.
It's a game changer. So if you haven't got that, or if Family Link want to sponsor us, make sure you get it, because it's all the power. Like, you don't need to fall out anymore. You don't need to have arguments. You go, no worries, I'll just turn your phone off.
It's funny, man, because my folks are currently moving. They're moving away from Leicester, which is where we are and where I live and where I was brought up. And they're currently moving. Well, they're going through the process of moving away, clearing out all their stuff. So much. My dad is like a bit of a hoarder. So he's kept like everything from the age of like 8 up
fair
until
play. Fair play,
you know, my uni days.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I like it. But when it's got to this point now where I'm having to like literally
you're
look
now
through
responsible
every
for
box.
It.
Yeah. And it's so hard, man, because like you're looking at stuff here and you're looking at it like, oh, a lot like sentimental value. And it's hard to throw a lot of it away. But also it's like, when am I ever going to look at this shit ever again?
It's difficult.
I enjoy keeping photographs. I enjoy keeping like small memories,
like little mementos.
Yeah, mementos of certain events or whatever. But he's kept like everything, every like action figure, every cuddly toy.
Dude, what
every
a legend!
Bank statement, every like first job, like interview notes and stuff like that, like everything. So I'm in a process of like chucking it away. I've kind of narrowed it down to about 3 or 4 boxes that I've kept, but. We were talking about like you can just watch it on Amazon now.
Yeah,
I've got like 200 DVDs that I'm in the process of getting rid of.
Mate.
So if anyone wants a DVD of Top Gear, like season
Top
8
smashes.
Or whatever, literally like, and I'm trying to get rid of all these DVDs. I've got like 200 because no one buys
no
DVDs.
One needs
no one needs DVDs no. anymore. So I think I've found a place that takes them for like 10p each or something.
Yeah, I sold my whole collection at a car boot.
Yeah, I mean, car boot's probably a good shout, man.
It hurts, though.
Yeah.
Because the problem is...
But there's no you know, you're not guaranteed to sell everyone at a car boot.
Well, that's what I
just want to, like, give them to someone.
Yeah,
and be like,
have this.
Can I have 20 quid?
Yeah. I did that. So we had, I think, between me and my wife, because my friend worked at a shop called Another World.
Yeah.
You remember Another World?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Planet.
And because he was my mate, like, he'd always sort us out with a good deal. So whatever money we had went on DVDs. Mm. And it started out with box sets and, like, we got all the Friends, all the Rockies, all the, oh, I want all Eddie Murphy. So then I've gone through Beverly Hills Cops and fucking 48 Hours, all this shit. And there's a memory attached to each and every one of them. And that's why your dad's a legend for doing what he's done. You need to buy him a beer. Because it's such, like, I've got scribbles on the back of beer mats off my kids. They're all saved. And they'll do the same thing. They're like, what the fuck's that?
Yeah.
But when the person came up at the car boot and I'd sort of got an idea, I think we had 400, 500, maybe 600 deep. There was fucking hundreds of them. And a couple had sold for a couple of quid here and there, but not really moving because someone to go through them all, it took ages. So then I got an idea. It was about, I think we were looking for about 100 quid. And at the time, that was like 5 discs, 20 quid a disc.
Yeah,
and
and
you're getting the fucking lot. And they literally, this bloke came up and just took it. And as he was taking them, I couldn't be there, which I know I'd made the decision. They'd been in the loft. They'd not been touched for forever. No one wanted them. But it was more the case that I wish I could have found someone that when I collect films, like I watched a documentary yesterday. And it was about these guys. It's called the Found Footage Festival. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
No.
But it's basically these two dudes that are fucking madheads that have got videotapes from the 80s and, like, instructional videos from McDonald's employees and shit that they go round and do a festival and, like, an instructional video of breathing from the 80s or, like, duck calls from the 70s. And really fucking weird shit. But it's a really cool documentary because then they basically go from doing that festival to then seeing how much they can get away with on daytime TV in America. And they send off, like, a note to the producer and say, we've got the world's best yo-yo champion. And they're like, yeah, yeah, no worries, come along. And he gets there and he's the most useless guy in the world. And there's someone else that goes, oh, we've got this guy that knows what to do with leftovers from dinners. And they get him on the TV and he's literally getting an ice cream cone and putting mashed potato in it and going, here, have you got Thanksgiving leftovers? Put it in an ice cream cone. Toppings, no problem. Here's some corn. And literally, because the anchors have got to go along with it, they wanted to see how far they could push it. And it's called Steel... something in steel. I can't remember. I'll find out for you. I'll put it in the comments. But it was one of them that, like, they have got a whole room dedicated to VHS tapes from, like, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s.
Yeah.
And that's where I wanted mine to end up. A collection that someone could see why I've got what I've got, rather than it being like, someone's going to sell them for 50p each and make 100 quid.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, I like it. Like I said, but he's got my dad... I think it's probably where I got my inspiration from, but he used to take a lot of photographs when we were younger and stuff. And he's got boxes of albums of negatives and photographs. I like that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I love that. It's just the going through every car, Hot Wheels, and just like,
don't get rid of any of them.
I know, man. But if Hot Wheels, I kept it all, I wouldn't have a living room space.
Mate, I'll have all Hot Wheels. Don't ever, mate. It's such a weird thing. Like, I think I've got 4 or 5 sheds that essentially my stuff migrates to. Once Stacey has enough of it in the house, it gets put away. And that goes upstairs into the junk room. Once she's had enough of it in the junk room, it goes into the loft. Once she rearranges the lock, because our loft's converted, so it's only the eaves. So my daughter lives in there, but it's the eaves where you can post stuff in. Once she runs out of room there, she's like, are you ever going to use this again? I'm like, yeah. She's like, you didn't even know this was here. I'm like, I fucking did. So then it has to migrate from the loft down to shed number one. When it gets to, like, the 4th or 5th shed,
yeah,
you can almost see a tear in its eye, like, I'm done, aren't I? You're getting rid of it. I'm like, listen.
It's like Andy's toys.
It fucking is. And I really struggle getting rid of stuff, man. I really, like, when you look at the set on any of the war rooms or any of the picks, all the wrestling figures across the TV were mine from being a kid. I bought them with my pocket money from Skegness.
Well, next week on the show, because I've kept some stuff. I kept a lot of Star Wars stuff, like my old Game Boys and whatnot. So on the next week's podcast, I'll bring some bits on, and we can have a little chat about it and reminisce.
Yeah, because it's weird. What Game Boy means to you is so different to what it means to me. Mm,
this is Game Boy Color. Exactly. And the Game Boy SP.
Did you have the flip?
Yeah, that's that one.
Is that the flip? Yeah. The cartridges were half the size.
Yeah.
What are you doing, Game Boy? Fucking, it's grey. It's got two red buttons. It's got a dot matrix screen, and it goes ding.
It's like the Motorola Razor of the Game Boy world.
Mate, Razor, dirty boy. But yeah, so, well, we are at 1 hour 20, dude, and you've got meetings to get to.
So I've got a little busy afternoon, so I've got to call it there, I think. But
Just hit the sponsors quick, because we've had a bit of feedback from Noosha that they have been inundated with orders. So thank you very much for everyone that has been supporting them. I know they support us through the podcast, so that's massively appreciated. The Star Wars collection is... Star Wars. The Street Fighter collection is... I saw it yesterday, and I was seeing they were doing the bosses. So we're getting close to the end of the Street Fighter, I think. But as always, sponsored by Noosha. Jump on, have a look, and let us know. And the same again with the comments. Jump in if there's anything that we've got wrong or you want us to talk about or discuss, stick it in the comments. We always appreciate your feedback. But other than that, we'll let you go to your meeting. It's been a pleasure, dude.
Yeah, take care, man. Nice. See you next week.
Take it easy.
I felt like a reptile. Like a reptile. I felt like a reptile.